Oh, welcome into another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Lobo Tigre. He is the editor of the Independent Speculator, which I will post a link to that website below. Now, Lobo, I just want to recap what we saw early on this week, especially yesterday, as U.S. markets sold off fairly significantly. They started the day down, and the sell-off did continue throughout the day, a lot on the back of trade worries, a more negative tone when it came to any trade deal being done between the U.S. and China. And on the flip side of that, we saw money flow into the safe havens. Precious metals had a nice move higher, really bounced right off some of this recent support right around 1455. Today, a little bit of the opposite's going on, as in the middle of the night, we got some more comments, and that's all they are, comments on maybe a trade deal being done. But these last couple days really do outline this balance between investors trying to figure out if they're bullish on U.S. markets, it means that they're almost running away from precious metals. But once U.S. markets fall, precious metals get that money flowing right back in. How are you balancing out this relationship?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's important to really stop and look at that event yesterday and see that gold is doing its job. Gold acted as a safe haven, silver too, of course, as they should. And again, this is not the first time we've discussed this, but I think for those people who are trying to make the case that silver has become just another industrial metal decoupling from gold, I think that's overinterpretation of the gold-silver ratio. Clearly, silver is still a precious metal, moves with the safe haven buying. So that ancient relationship is intact. Gold is still doing its job as a safe haven, and that's very important. And if you look forward and you think, is the world going to be safe for all financial transactions and investments in the next year, then maybe you don't want to own gold. But if you think that the world might have just a little bit of risk for investors in the year ahead, you still want to own and have an allocation to safe haven. So that's one thing. On the other hand, I can absolutely get that there's a concern there that if gold is moving inversely to the stock market and the Fed is clearly going to support the stock market and it's going to throw the dollar under the bus to keep the party going, the record expansion going in the United States as long as possible, that would be bullish for Wall Street, bearish for gold, and the opposite of what we're just talking about. I think that's true, but less true than the safe haven thing. So give me a little bit more time here to unpack that. I'm saying, yes, you'll see days where gold drops when stocks go up like today. But if the stocks are going up because of the Fed's easy money policies fundamentally driving things, there are headlines today about, oh, yes, optimism on trade rallies the Dow. I'm not sure that's true. I think the fundamental is this: the easy money's got to go somewhere, and a lot of it is going into the stocks. Quantitative easing, in particular, is more directly linked to assets on Wall Street than it is to the average Joe's checkbook. So the easy money policy being bullish for stocks is not necessarily bearish for gold. The easy money policy is bad for the dollar, and gold is priced in the dollar. So yes, as you have, risk on, risk off changes, you'll see gold respond and fluctuate to that. But fundamentally, both of the assets are responding to lower dollar and the flood of easy money out there. So I think that what I'm saying here boils down to is on days where you have fear really driving the safe haven trade, you see sharp moves and you see the precious metals responding very strongly. On other days, you may see gold give back some, but it's not as dramatic. And underlying all of this, I think the trade and the other issues are really not as important as what the Fed is doing. That's fundamental. And to all the people out there who believe in the dictum of don't fight the Fed, I think you're actually fighting the Fed if you short gold in the face of the easy money policies they've clearly articulated.
So I think one key comment there that you made said both assets are responding to easy money. All we need to do is look at what happened this year so far, because yes, U.S. markets are right around all-time highs. They kept on hitting all-time highs for the last about month and a half to 2 months, but gold also had a breakout. So there wasn't this inverse correlation all year long. Both assets or both sectors were still running higher in a longer-term sense. Take us through how important that was, but also, again, understanding that the Fed was cutting rates this year and both sectors responded.
Well, I think you pretty much said it. I don't know if we need to beat that one to death. You know, gold is up for the year. Gold broke out of a six-year prison that, you know, the precious metals were trapped in. And typically, you know, characteristically, we saw silver lag and then start to play catch-up. So it just seems to me that it's pretty straightforward. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at this and say, well, gee, you know, the easy money is having its natural, if unintended, consequence.
So does that mean we're waiting then for the Fed to remove this hold position that they're on for some more rate cuts?
Yeah. Sorry. I get that. No. Actually, I don't think that's necessary at all. let's pull back to the global stage and then zoom back in on this. You know, one of the reasons I think for the strength of gold is that we have this proliferation of negative interest rates around the world. And even if you're not a gold bug, right, you don't own a bunker in Idaho, you don't have more guns than kids, and, you know, a stash of gold buried out in the garden, right? You're just a normal, you know, Joe Schmo on Wall Street looking for yield, seeking alpha. Well, you know, negative interest rates on bonds, that's terrible. That criticism, that age-old criticism, well, gold doesn't pay interest. Well, you know what? Zero interest is much better than negative interest. So this is, I think, another fundamental in support for gold, regardless of what the Fed does. This reality around the world, these negative interest rates. So that's sort of the bigger picture. Now let's come back to the Fed. And you say, well, are we on hold waiting for the next rate cut? Not necessarily. The current rate, you know, target rate is less than inflation, or the most recent inflation figures anyways. And if they are successful in stimulating or achieving higher inflation through their asymmetric higher inflation goals, sorry, their symmetric inflation goals, which allow them to not try to squash higher inflation to make up for the years of lower inflation, you know, we could have even more negative real rates in the United States. So we don't have nominally negative rates in the United States as is, but we don't need to cut anymore to have negative real rates in the United States right now. And in the face of negative real rates, you know, I think gold looks much more attractive to the average investor out there than it would have otherwise. And again, on a global scale, it looks quite attractive compared to negative. So there's plenty of reason for gold to at least hold on, if not notch higher, which translates to actual yield here, where other assets are, or supposedly safe assets like bonds, are going to underperform.
All right, let's move a little bit into some of the stocks and some of your strategies. We have talked quite a bit over the last few months of really focusing on high-quality companies, ones that have good projects, ones that have good teams behind them, and a good strategy moving forward. But I think it's also important to dive into some of the jurisdictional risk. And you actually just wrote a article in the Independent Speculator back in the beginning of December, December 2nd, actually, that focused on Mexico. Now, there are a lot of companies exploring in Mexico, a lot of, I think, good work and attractive properties in Mexico right now. But let's just start off with your overall assessment of the risks and the benefits of Mexico.
Well, you know, it's very sad. And clearly, there is a higher political risk. You know, that's the broad umbrella. We call it political risk. But it's not really political so much as physical safety. There is a physical safety risk that, you know, you have to consider right now if you invest in companies, or if you work for those companies, or if you're like me, you go visit those companies, go kick rocks in the field. I got to tell you, in those hot areas, I'm going to think twice before I put on my boots and head down there. You know, I don't want to be caught in a crossfire between gangs and themselves or the government. So this is important. You know, it's important not to sweep this under the rug. It's real, it's happening, and it's visibly escalating. And an important change here is, let me rewind and say, as the casualties in the drug war in Mexico started ratcheting up into the thousands, and it's been that way for years, you know, 5,000 plus deaths per year in Mexico due to the drug war. Friends of mine in Colombia, where I also visit frequently looking at mining projects, don't, you know, they shake their heads and say, sadly, it looks like Mexico is going down the path of Colombia. And that's going to be terrible. It's going to be decades because you can't deal with these criminal organizations. And I disagree. Yes, the violence was escalating, but it was still pretty much between the gangs themselves and between the gangs and the government. It hadn't turned predatory on the population the way it did in Colombia. And that's really the red flag I'm seeing now. And the recent stories that we've seen, you know, the Mormon families, the women and children shot up, you know, that's not caught in a crossfire between gangs. That's some gang deciding to send a message and shoot up civilians. So that's a significant difference. And I think, again, it would pay investors to pay heed to this. It's important. Now, that said, I am the punchline to, you know, not make this go too long here. The punchline of the article was that I'm not ready to say, okay, sell everything in Mexico, get out of Mexico. It's too dangerous. If we look at that specific situation, in fact, it was tied to a member of that community speaking out against the gangs. So it wasn't just a random shooting of civilians. It was a response from the narcos against members of this community. I'm not saying that was good, of course, at all. I'm not saying it was in any way anything other than an absolute tragedy. I'm saying it's not random. And so if you are a miner minding your own business and you don't take on the narcos, you don't speak out against them, you maybe you remain unmolested. And in fact, these companies, they have security policies in place. They have insurance against theft, bullion, and so on. And you know, ultimately, if push really comes to shove, we know that if a mine is big enough, rich enough, valuable enough, it is actually possible for a mining company to essentially contract a private army, you know, create a security force strong enough to deter attacks. Newmont did this in Peru back in the battle days of the Sendero Luminoso, which is a major terrorist organization there. Newmont basically created its own army to protect the Yanacocha gold mine, you know, one of their crown jewels back in the day. So it can be done. It can be managed. It's a cost. And if the projects are rich enough, that cost can be managed. But it's absolutely a factor, and you know, that I need to look at as an analyst. You know, are you operating in one of these increased cost areas? What is your physical safety protocol? You know, how prepared are you for this? And all of that would factor into my decisions as an investor. But I'm not telling everybody to just dump Mexico. It's too dangerous.
Yeah, fair enough. You know what? Sometimes even the worst countries, there can be these good projects that come out. But I think it's all about deciding what kind of a almost discount rate you want to put on certain companies. One other comment, though, and this is one thing that I'm actually quite confused about when it comes to Mexico, is you hear about all these different areas and you hear some things about, oh, this area has a lot more gang violence in. But this area, there is gangs there, but you can still get work done. How do you go about isolating the different areas in Mexico? Because in all fairness, I've heard that some areas much better to work in and other areas much tougher to work in. But I still don't understand where is good and where isn't.
Well, that's not something that's ever going to be cut and dry. And I think, you know, it's clear that northwestern Mexico, those states, you know, below Arizona and so on, are more of a hotspot. Within the states, there are definitely hotter regions. You know, the more inaccessible mountainous regions are known to be growing regions. I remember it used to be that if you were a geologist and you went around chipping boulders and stuff like that, and you know, the narcos might come out of the mountains and menace you, and you say, "I'm just a geologist. Don't worry about me. I don't care what you're doing," and they let you go. But then the federales got wind of that, and they started sending agents in posing as geologists. And then once the narcos found out about that, then being a geologist was no longer a safe thing to say. So it's a tit for tat. It's constantly changing. It's moving around. Generally speaking, the Northwest states are more dangerous. But you know what? you know, you could run into roadblocks and guys with guns in southern Mexico as well. I remember there was a time when Chiapas was in semi-rebellion down there. So all of Mexico needs to be viewed with some caution. But as you say, you know, there's a discount to cover and compensate for that. And at this point, it is certainly not so dangerous that you just say, you know what, exit the country. I think that would be leaving a lot of money on the table.
All right, we're going to wrap it up there, but I will, again, post a link to that Independent Speculator website where you can also read that article that Lobo wrote on Mexico. But hey, Lobo, interesting chatting with you and a good little look inside Mexico where I agree with you. There are still good opportunities. It's not a country to completely run away from, but you do need to stay on top of the situations and on top of the management teams to make sure that you are getting the full story of what's going on down there. Lobo, great chatting with you. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks. You too, Corey.